Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I'm coming to you live from my iMac Pro, as I almost always am, but it's gone. It is an X current computer now.
It's still a computer.
That's a weird
I was going to make it's the parrot, you know, it's an X parrot thing, except it's not an X computer. It's still a computer. It works. This is the thing is we hold
it's
the funeral
for the
iMac Pro, but existing iMac Pros will work. It's just like we had the funeral for the butterfly keyboard, but people are still going to deal with that dumb keyboard for years to come.
Right. Sure. Yeah. I mean, these things stick around, right? There was a comment somewhere. This is kind of a separate topic, but I think somebody at the Toyota, some executive there, was like, "Well, if Apple's going to build a car, they have to be ready to support it for 40 years." I'm like, "Yeah, well, they're used to supporting things that last for a while, at least."
It's actually true. That's actually a good point. That unlike their your Android phone that, like, I keep buying these Google Nexus phones as Android reference phones, and a year or two later, they're like, "That won't run the latest Android again." It's like,
right.
God,
I mean,
it's killing me here.
Apple, at least, you know, it's got its vintage and obsolete lists, depending on, I think that's all, is that European or California law that makes them do that? There's different ones, too, because there's somewhere, like, in some countries, certain things, like, I want to say there was one in France recently where something had to be extended and, yeah, anyways, there's all these laws that maintain, like, how long they have to sort of support things. Even there, they aren't, like, required to support them with, like, software updates and stuff. They have to just sort of support the hardware, which is, you know, it's weird loopholes because, you know, when computers sort of became more and more prominent, they didn't quite slot into any of our existing laws.
I was thinking about this yesterday for unrelated reasons, but one of the challenges that any company that makes a product is support, right? Because you're essentially, like, we used to work in the magazine business, even though, you know, you primarily did online and I did a lot of web stuff, you know, but we were for a company that made money on a magazine. And I learned there the concept of subscription liability, which is the idea that if somebody pays you for a year, you don't get to just pocket that money. And this is actually true even of Six Colors, right? If somebody pays us for a year and then we shut it down, we kind of owe them money, I think.
Right.
And legally, sure. I think also, because like for Macworld, you buy 12 issues. And if I only do six of them and then I shut down the magazine, I owe you six issues. And so accounting wise, there was always the concept of subscription liability. For product makers and sellers, it's about after sales, right? It's about all of the support and warranty information and recalls and all of those things because products. I mean, what I always said about Apple stuff is that if you have one in 1,000 or one in 100,000 that's a lemon at Apple's product volumes, there's still a bunch of lemons. Like, lemons happen. Bad, broken products happen. Even with the best companies with the highest quality, bad products happen, and you got to support them. And so, you know, when you can't just walk away, be like, "Yep, I'm going to count my money," and the relationship extends beyond that. And so for older hardware, making parts available for repair, whether you're repairing them internally or whether you're working with repair shops. But this is, I was thinking about cars too. It's the idea that, you know, this happens because you want to reassure buyers that if they buy your product and it breaks, that you're not completely out of luck, that you can
with a car where you're spending tens of thousands of dollars.
Exactly. Yeah. So there they'll be like, it's a 10 bumper to bumper, 10 year, 100,000 mile, you know, stuff like that. And for the, I have an early hybrid car and I have an electric car. And in both of those cases, there were warranty extensions. In the case of a hybrid, which is a 2005, so it's old now, It had a battery failure, and I thought, "Oh my God, I'm gonna have to pay like $5,000. It's more than the car is worth to get the battery replaced." And it turned out that in the early days of selling hybrids, Honda, this is a Civic hybrid, had to reassure people, no, it'll be okay. If there are battery issues, because there were some battery issues, and people were like not buying them, and they're like, "Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to extend our battery warranty for like 10 years. And my battery died 9 years and 10 months into that. And so I got a totally new battery in that car, which is awesome." But I thought this is an interesting demonstration of how extended service guarantees are all part of the reassuring somebody to make the purchase up front of a product. And so there's a balance there, right? You are putting more value into the product by guaranteeing it for some amount of time, by supplying a warranty, especially if it's something that's extended. There are limits to that, but and like you buy a cheaper product that maybe doesn't make you feel as reassured, but you know, it is all part of the overall story that you can't, I mean, at least you can be a bad company and just sell it and run away, but
right.
If it breaks, too bad. But then I feel like you're risking that the word's going to get out that you can't buy that product because it's disposable.
Yeah, no, and I mean, Apple's always operated that way in the computer sphere, right? Like, they have produced products that tend to have longer lifespans and better resale values and all of that.
Because and they support, their software support extends beyond that. They
right,
their that's
software
a cost
support goes
too,
back
right?
many generations.
That's a, yeah. I mean, it, there are some benefits to Apple, but it is also a cost to for Apple to make sure that operating system updates work on old hardware, because they have to do that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and that's not the case across the board, as we just said, with Android and other stuff. I mean, especially in cases
it's
where
easier
there are
to
a lot
walk
of things
away.
In Android phones where, like, there are things in Android phones, though, where, like, updates were based on, like, carriers, too. And,
right.
And it's like, that's kind of, I mean, does a carrier care if your phone doesn't work, or are they just, you know, incentivized to let you buy a new phone? It's not their product, right? So that's weird. It's a weird situation to be in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, stuff with the car, we've talked about this a bunch before with the car stuff, right? Like, there's all sorts of ancillary things that have to be thought about when a car, not only warranty service, but like regular service. And, you know, all these other things that come into play with it. Like, I'm sitting here thinking about my car, which is had a like a slow leaking tire for like several months, and I just haven't taken it in because, you know, pandemic. Yeah. And I just slowly refill my tire every couple days. That's how I live now.
Uh-huh.
But it's, you know, that's kind of the kind of stuff you'll have to deal with. You have to drive your car into the mall, into the Apple store.
When I was a kid, you know, because I grew up in out in the country, we had an air compressor. So you'd like flip a breaker and this just loud thing would come on. But you could use that to pump up your basketball or inflate your bike tire or blow off something that was dusty. There was like a thing you could put on it that would just kind of like air blast it. It was pretty awesome. And I realized that I kind of had internalized that of like a, you know, so now I had this issue for a while where it's like I find my car has a flat tire in my driveway and I'm like, well, what do I do? Like, where's the air compressor? And the answer is it's gone. Although my mom still has one. I don't think it's the same one. It's smaller, but my mom still has one because my dad was like, I'm going to have one of those. So I bought a gadget. I bought a gadget at Home Depot, basically, that is a battery operated. It uses the same batteries as my weed whacker and my blower and my drill. They're all the same company, so they all use the same batteries. And it you dial in the PSI and hook it up to a tire and press a button and it inflates the tire. It's awesome.
Yeah. I have a little portable one that just goes in the back of the car that plugs into the cigarette lighter.
Oh, yeah. See, that'll work too. So this one, you know, I can leave it in the car or I can, you know, if we were going somewhere, I could put it in the car. But it just sits in my office here and I've used it a bunch and it's kind of fun. So there's
tired of almost all the time I would drive to the local gas station and about 50% of the time the compressor there was out of order.
Oh
they're now they make you pay for them all too, which is annoying,
right? And
it's like
I would
$3
to,
and it's like grab some quarters. I'm like, I don't want to waste all my quarters on this stupid air compressor.
I would have to do the thing where I get the bike pump in order to pump it up enough to drive it to the place
where I can fill it up.
And the bike pump of a car tire is exhausting.
That's not good. Yeah.
It's exhausting. You can do it.
That's a lot. It's a lot, though.
It's terrible. But
it's not designed
I don't want to drive on the rim, so I'm going to have to pump it up a little bit and then to get it over there.
Yeah, weirdly, the compressor does not work well enough on the bike. It doesn't go to a high enough PSI for the bike tires because the bike tires are much higher PSI. At least one of my wife's bikes, like it requires a much higher one than the car.
Well, this is the great thing about this podcast, and we've heard this from listeners too. So it goes to unexpected places, which is why I'm going to tell you my lawnmower story now. Because the reason that I was thinking about product warranties is that my lawnmower it stopped working properly. It's like a self-advancing, it pushes itself, a lawnmower. Which is nice because it's very hard to push it. The way it's designed is you're supposed to use its power to push forward, and it all of a sudden only goes at full speed, which is like Jane, stop this crazy thing speed. It's not a speed that you can actually mow the lawn at. And I took it apart in order to figure out what was going on. And the thing is, I disassembled it, found the two switches. This was last weekend. And it worked fine. I was like, wow. Okay, maybe just something was weird in the connections, but now I got it and it's working fine. I put it back together and it worked fine. And then I put it back all completely together and on and in mowing position, and it went back to the way it was. And what I discovered is there are wires that run from the controls that are up at the top where you hold the mower as you're pushing it or watching it go, because you don't push it. And you can actually see the wire conduit snakes down a couple of jumps into where all the electronics are. And I discovered by unsnapping the telescoping handle of the thing, that when it was extended fully, which is what you need to do to actually run the mower, it was runaway speed. But if you got it a little bit lower down, it wasn't. It was controllable like normal. And then I actually just started wiggling the wire conduit, and I could get it to toggle between runaway insanity and normal operation. And I realized there's a wire. There's like a loose wire. This is what it is. There's a loose wire, probably because the wiring is a little too tight. I discovered when I was taking it apart, the wiring is a little too tight. That maybe should have been a little more slack in the wiring, but there's a loose wire in there. And I'm thinking, okay, I didn't register for the warranty. So do I get a warranty? Do I have to find a lawnmower repair shop? I have only had this. It turns out I looked it up. I did register for the warranty. I found my purchase less than 2 years ago. I bought this thing. And it's like, I had my previous lawnmower I had for 20 years. And the only thing that I had to do was replace the blade after a while. And I had to replace a single plastic part that snapped off. That was it for like 20 years, 15 years. And this thing, less than 2 years, is like this. And it was my experience with the warranty, because the people who made it, they're like, yeah, it's like a 4-year warranty. And if this is our problem, we'll fix it. But you have to go to one of the places that we designate. And they said, so you need to drive over to the East Bay. First, they tried to send me to Santa Ana, which is in Southern California. And I was like, that's really not nearby. And I don't know what they were doing.
It's the same state.
But they sent me to El Cerrito in the East Bay. And I drove over there yesterday. And I wheel my mower up. I'm like walking across a crosswalk in a city with a lawnmower, which was hilarious to me anyway. I'm sure people thought I was, I don't know, mowing the pavement. The nice lady at the front desk was like, oh, we don't service those guys anymore. Like, but they gave me your name yesterday. So I was sad. I got a Zachary's Chicago style pizza out of it, because that's a great pizza place.
At least that's something.
So I did go over there while I was, because I've only been to East Bay like twice since in the last year. So I was like, all right, well, we're going to get a pizza out of this. And they're sending me to another place that's also in the East Bay in Amityville. And so maybe I'll get it fixed. But I did have that moment where I thought
you
to
call
myself,
them first.
Well, yeah, that's going to happen. But I did call them first, and they're like, yeah, just bring it on over. And then they're like, no, I guess I should have been clear about what brand it was. Anyway, my point here, and I do have one, is I did grapple with the thought of like, are they just making it hard for me to get service, right? Like, should I just go to my local lawnmower repair place and pay them $100 to fix this thing? Or do I need, or $50 or whatever it is, right? Or do I need to stand on the principle of the thing, which is, no, you sold me a lawnmower less than 2 years ago and it doesn't work right. You should fix it. I don't know. So I've been thinking a lot about this. Like, what are the responsibilities of a company that puts a product out into the world? And if Apple makes a car, they are obviously going to have these responsibilities. Or I would say more likely contract with a corporation or network of corporations that will fulfill their duties to do those kind of repairs. We did just have Lauren's MacBook Air butterfly keyboard replacement program cycle, too, which took like 2 weeks, where she didn't have a computer, which sucked. But you know, I appreciate that Apple has some company, because it's not Apple per se. It's some company in Memphis, Tennessee, that basically takes in the FedEx boxes from around the country and then fixes those keyboards and then puts them back on FedEx planes to return to their destination. And that's, you know, that's the business. You're a big company like that, and that's the business.
Yep. Yeah. It's I totally hear what you're saying about the like. Do I stand on the principle versus paying the money to get it done? And like, right. I feel like I grapple with that decision not infrequently, where I'm like, I'm annoyed. This company, you know, we made a deal. I gave them money. They gave me a product or a service. I feel that they must stand on that. And it's just, it's tough sometimes to sort of figure out, well, like, what are the battles you can win?
It's often, it's the definition of what the product is, right? Because, you know, I think some companies are on one end of the spectrum. Like, there was a... Isn't like L.L. Bean famous for this? I think they've changed their policy a little bit, but it used to be like basically if any of their stuff wore out, you could send it to them and they would send you a replacement because they wanted you. And the point is not that every single person is going to do that. The point, and I think people start to do it and they're like, all right, we need to set some rules here. But the idea was we stand by our product. We're so confident that it'll be good and it'll last you that we'll replace it if you have a problem with it. I had a backpack from Brent Haven that had something that was worn through it, and it was like 8 years, 10 years later, and they're like, send it to us and we'll either fix it or replace it. And they mended it and sent it back to me. It was amazing,
yeah,
right?
I had that with a company called Spire, I want to say, that made like a laptop backpack. In fact, I've got the older one sitting here, I think, like where they, same thing, something broke. And I sent it to them, and they're like, yeah, sure. We'll just send you. It was a strap, like a shoulder strap. Yeah. And like, we'll send you a whole new bag. I was like, whoa, okay. That seems excessive, but thanks.
Yeah, actually, Brent Haven offered that. And I said, I actually like this better than your current backpack. Can you just fix the strap? And they did. Breville, the maker of our favorite, the T-Robot, the automatic tea maker, my T-Robot broke. There's like a little conveyor inside this post that's got a magnet on it, and that's what lowers the basket into the hot water and then raises it back out. And it was, something happened, it slipped or something and was not positioned right, and it didn't work. And I contacted them and they said, send it to us. And I sent it to them thinking, are they going to charge me? What are they going to do? Like, I don't even know if it's under warranty or whatever. They just sent me a new one. They just sent me a new one to replace the one that broke.
Either. But it is, I mean, it makes a big difference, right? Like, there's a lot of customer service is really a kind of a huge thing, right? I mean,
yeah.
If you do that and they say, you know, it's going to be $100 to fix it, and you're like, oh God, it's $100. Like, the thing is expensive, right? Like, I guess that's cheaper than buying a new one. But like, you start thinking about like what else will go wrong, like, etc. And it's, again, your point about not everyone's going to do it is the important part, right? Like, if everybody starts replacing these things, then sure, you're going to run into some problems. But if they're confident enough in their product and they've built it and they're like, you know what, 1%, 5%, whatever, or people might run into a problem, we just give them a new one. And the answer is they're making these things at scale, right? Like, they're making them, there tend to be larger companies that are building lots of these things. And in the end of the day, it's cheaper for them to send you a new thing than to deal with like the fallout from repairing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends up being better for them because you are going to go and talk about the fact that they replaced this thing for you and it was free and like they did a great job, etc.
Yeah.
And that's hard to put a price tag on, but it
accumulates to the value
it has something
of the brand, because what we're saying is I like what they do. They stand by their products, and like L.L. Bean or the Brent Haven backpack or any other company like that. And so that's value. That is part of it.
You'll buy more stuff from them, right? And you'll mention it to other people. That's a win.
And on the other side of the spectrum, there are companies that don't stand by their products. And,
sure.
And you could argue there's a quid pro quo there, which is those products are probably cheaper. And this gets to a larger point that I think happens a lot, where people argue about the price of products. And they're like, oh, those guys are ripping you off. And sometimes, sure, I mean, nobody wants to think about profit margin. But profit margin, like, companies got to make money. This is what they do. They sell it to you for more than it costs to make it. Like, that is how it works. But part of what goes in, I would argue, is at least we have this perception that you spend more, but you get more. You get a higher quality product, or you get a product that if it fails, they'll stand by it. And I know that... some of that, the challenge is some of that is psychological and not real. Like,
yes.
Some of it, it's not true. It's just, it feels like it's expensive, so therefore it's good, but it's not actually good. But the other side is true too, which is you have like a lot of clothing, for example, in the last 20, 30 years has gotten super cheap because basically the market has said nobody cares about the quality of clothing. All we care about is the price. And now you see that there are brands, I think the internet has enabled a whole bunch of brands especially to make higher quality stuff that costs more, and that's their whole pitch, is this is higher quality, like L.L. Bean, this is higher quality stuff, but we stand by it. Like I bought a bunch of American Giant stuff recently, and that's their whole brand promise, is this is the good stuff. We actually use high quality materials. It's not what you're going to get at Target. Sorry, Target.
Right. And there's a I thought back as you said, like talked about things being more expensive and tend to be last longer. That's always something I think about when I'm buying something. I look at this and think like, all right, I'm going to spend a little bit more, but I'm going to get something that hopefully lasts longer and is more resilient and et cetera. But I will say, I never got in quite as big an argument with my now wife as we did years ago when she was moving to DC and she went to buy a toaster oven. And this was not long after, I think, some of the John Syracuse toaster incidents and stuff. And so I looked at the wire cutter and they love the, you know, the wire cutter is like, oh, the Breville one again. Breville, great brand, right? But it's also like a $200 toaster oven. And trying to sell my, convince my, oh, like, well, this one's really highly reviewed and it will probably last longer. We just got into such a huge argument where he's like, I just want to buy this $30 Black & Decker toaster oven. It's a fraction of the cost. It's going to toast up the same.
Yeah.
And she did. And it was fine. Yeah. That's the thing. It was a $30 toaster oven and it worked great for her. It was a tank. It's still alive. I think she gave it to her parents. And it's like, she was just very frustrated with me telling her I needed to spend, you know, four times as much on a toaster oven. And like, totally fair.
First off, not everybody has the means to do it. But second off, not everybody, you know, feels the need to have something be, not every purchase has to be the best quality, the high quality thing.
Sure.
Sometimes, in fact, I find it sometimes freeing. I just did this. I bought a screwdriver. Okay. So like my, I have a lot of stuff. I've lived in this house for 22 years now. Oh God. And a lot of my tools are 22 years old because it's like, oh no, I have a house. I need to use a screwdriver now. I mean, I had screwdrivers before. It was like, I'm going to get the electric screwdriver or whatever. And my electric screwdriver has been kind of not working right for the last couple of years. And I've just toughed it out where it's like, you have to kind of hold part of it in the exact right part for it to work.
I bought one for my dad that had the same problem.
and I thought to myself, what does an electric screwdriver cost? And the answer, friends, is like $20. And it's one of those things where I went on the wire cutter and they're like, you should get this one, or there's this one, and there's this one. And that's fine. And I did actually get one of the wire cutter picks. But there is something else to be said. And again, I would prefer to buy something that costs a little bit more and lasts. But there is,
exactly.
In some categories, you look at it and it's like, this has been commodified. All of them are $20. This one has some good reviews. And honestly, if it doesn't last 20 years, it costs $20. What do I care? Right. I'm just going to get another one. So let's just do it. And that, so not everything needs to be an ultra premium. Like I did not buy the $100 ultra premium screwdriver, right? I didn't do that.
Well, you know, and this links into other stuff that we've talked about before, probably a little closer to home. But like I was just chatting with some friends recently and they were expressing their dismay with how many apps are ad supported or, you know, require in-app purchase. And as opposed to the model, specifically, I think a lot of it was about games, right? And it's like, as opposed to games where it's like, I want to pay you $5 and you give me a game. And I understand the frustration with that for sure, especially on the advertising front, because, you know, it is a trade-off, right? You get this thing for quote unquote free, but it's full of ads and it's oftentimes not a great experience. And in some ways, the same way the market has maybe driven towards things being commodified at a $20 screwdriver or whatever, the market has driven things like iOS games, mobile games, and stuff like that towards those ad-supported methodologies just because it gets people in the door. And, you know, that's a tough situation to be in because it's not the best experience, but it's also kind of the way the game is played now. And so, you know, there's lots of other stuff going on in that market with subscription services and all that as well. But yeah, I mean, I think we were talking about this a little bit on the rebound this week as well, in terms of like subscriptions for apps. And there are apps that I'm happy to pay subscriptions for, but it is a bummer at times when it's like, I just want to pay for this app once.
Right.
And it's fine. And I'll pay for an upgrade, you know, if that comes down the road and they're like, hey, we got a brand new version and it's another, you know, 10, 20 bucks or something like that. Like, great, fine. Well, I'll pay you for that.
People have to do, they have to do what they have to do to survive. But I've discovered that the thing that really works for me the best is use this app and it has basic functionality. And then there's all this other stuff that it does that you pay for. Because that allows you to try that and love it. And then say, well, I love this app. Now I'm going to pay to unlock the rest of it. And the ones on the other side of that spectrum are the ones that are like, you can't even use this app without paying for it.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, I had something recently, and some of them have tiers too. Like, I, you know, Carrot sure. updated its weather app, and it's like, oh, I really love the idea of having like a radar widget, but like the cost, you have to go to like the highest plan yeah. for that.
Which,
like,
I'm, you know, which I'm paying for because that's also where the weather station feature is.
And right. And I was like, I don't need it. Yeah. It's not something I yep. need right now. Yeah. So that's fine. But, you know, they're, it's tricky. I understand because like people. Software has always been an interesting conundrum when it comes to that. People have often struggled with the idea of paying for things that are not tangible.
Right.
And so, and you know, there are
ongoing,
different models.
Ongoing support, it's what we've been talking about. You actually really did bring it around, which is subscriptions are a way to just lock in ongoing support, which is one way to do it, right? Which is just like
right, right.
giving
but
the money.
The frustration comes to you when you have so many subscriptions, right? Like, I think there's yes. also a subscription fatigue thing. That's real, right? We've talked about that before with streaming services, but I think it's true
Absolutely.
Potentially with software too. It's like, how many apps am I paying every month $3 for?
Right, and sometimes I don't want to pay a subscription for this screwdriver, right? I just want to buy the screwdriver.
Yes, right.
And so, and not every person is the same. Not every tool is the same. And not every app needs to be the $20 screwdriver, right? Like some apps
sure.
in a category can say, well, we're not the $20 screwdriver. We are the finicky, we're the DeWalt. That's actually generally what the tools are. We're the DeWalt screwdriver that costs $80 or $40, or it's a lot more than the other ones cost. And you're buying the brand and you're buying that, you know, that maybe it's got some special features that it's using, but it's not for everybody. And I agree that it's fatiguing. And that's why I keep coming back to the idea that I know it's whatever works for you as a developer is the right thing to do, but I just am such a fan of the, use it and then enable other features, because you are mm-hmm. essentially selling them a $20 screwdriver that can become the $40 screwdriver once you realize, oh, I like this screwdriver. Sorry, I'm really running with the screwdriver metaful here. But
I love unlocking new features on my screwdriver. That's
you know,
favorite.
Well, that's a very Doctor Who of you.
I mean, the other corollary here on the flip side, which I've also been thinking about a lot recently and I've written some stuff about, is the cases where the market is limited and you have to pay for something and it's a bad product and there's no support. So cable companies or carriers,
oh, yeah.
like these are cases where it's like, guess what? We're going to charge you a bunch every month. Your options to go and buy it from somebody else are limited, and we don't particularly care oftentimes about customer support, like, or at least varying levels depending on the problems that you're
right.
running into. And the answer is because it doesn't matter, because you can't go somewhere else, or your options at the very least to go somewhere else are incredibly limited.
Right. I was thinking about this.
That's a tough situation.
I was thinking about this with video streaming software, which is a very niche thing, but like there's some free open source stuff and there's some stuff that's kind of expensive. None of it is any good, by the way. I think by mm-hmm. my standards, it's amazing what it does, but and it's like Streamlabs, OBS, they're free, they're open source. What they do for that price is amazing, but they're also, I would say, they've got lots of problems. But then if you
and
go
they're
up
not
and
incentivized
spend,
to fix
right,
it,
right? But if you go up and spend $100 on Wirecast, it's not very good either. So
it's more than 100 too, right? Isn't it like 4 or 5? I thought it was much more expensive.
I think, yeah, honestly, I think Wirecast now is kind of like $100 a year.
Ah, yeah. Which but, is not, you know, a fine. I guess that's, you know, $8 a month.
But
or
I just
whatever,
had a bad experience with OBS and I just paid Telestream $90 for a year of Wirecast support because I decided I'm going to give that a try again, because even though I don't like it, it has support. And it may not have the bugs that the open source stuff has, but I mention it in terms of cable companies because it's a similar situation, which is like sometimes there's just not a good option, and
right.
that's
right.
frustrating. Whether it's because there's you know there's a monopoly there, or whether because there's so limited interest that you're pretty much
or
stuck with
yeah.
one two options, and that's all you can do. Yeah. I've been doing all yeah. these markdown text editors, and I've been thinking about this too because they all have different models. Like some of them are just you buy them. Some of them are free with a subscription tier. The one that I've been trying out, Tayo, mm-hmm. that's their model. And again, I kind of like it. BBEdit does that. BBEdit used to have a free version called Text Wrangler, and now they discontinued Text Wrangler because BBEdit has a free tier where like for you can just get BBEdit for free, and then it's got a whole... a bunch of features that are in the paid tier but you can use it for free. And Tayo is like that, which I like that model, like I said, because you get your feet wet. Whereas with a lot of App Store stuff, you get a trial, but then the trial ends, and then a year later, you're like, I want to try that app again. It's like, well, no, your trial expired. Sorry, you have to pay us to use it again.
Exactly.
Like, but I don't want... Can you give me another 7-day trial?
Nope. It's interesting. And sometimes I think that works and sometimes it doesn't for me, because I think sometimes I get quickly frustrated by the lack of stuff. It's like, this seems interesting, but like, what about this? I got to pay for that. I got to pay for that too. It's like, I don't know if it's worth it, right? Like, maybe I'm not sold on the features that are presented for free. So sometimes it's enough to get me in the door. And sometimes it's just like, that's fine. This isn't doing it for me. I'm going to go back to whatever I was using before.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I'll tell you this about subscription fatigue. I am glad that people are listening to this podcast, because that means they are subscribing to Six Colors, and we appreciate it.
This is true.
Yeah, because it is a subscription. This is a subscription product, and we stand by it. We will, we're going to have to support this episode for, a year, two, maybe not. Maybe not.
What's the warning like after this episode? Do you think anybody listens after the week is up? Probably not as many people.
I don't know. I mean, there are always those obsessive podcast listeners who are like, I'm going to start at the beginning. And it's like, but it's timely. Why would you do that? And
right.
Like, it's like, okay. Okay.
It's like, I appreciate it. I heard you and Mike give a shout out to Clockwise at the end of Upgrade this week, talking about it a little bit, which is nice. And I thought about that, because it's like, we're at like almost 400 episodes of Clockwise. And it's like, I would not start at the beginning.
No.
That would be weird.
No, somebody did that with TV Talk Machine though. And I found that extremely disturbing, because it's like, that's also a very timely podcast, or it was, it's done now. But, and yet people were doing it. Like, I don't know, that's Syracuse mode there. Listen from the beginning. Most podcasts, you don't need to listen from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, if it's Total Party Kill, or it's, recovering TV show or something, yeah, go nuts. That's fine.
There's literally as a podcaster, there's a tag you can put in your feed that says start at beginning versus start at end. This is a start at end kind of podcast.
Right? I think so.
We're that kind. Anyway, thanks again for supporting us and subscribing. And until next week, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.